When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello.
Hi, this is Gilbert Gottfried. Welcome to Behind the Scenes with Brian, your go-to podcast on old things mining.
Welcome to Behind the Scenes with Brian, the podcast covering everything from engineering, mining, and mine waste management to whatever else may be on our minds. Pop in your headphones and don't forget to rate, subscribe, and share. And now here is your host, Brian Ulrich.
Everyone, this is Brian, and this is Behind the Scenes with Brian. And today I am joined by a student at Cal Davis, Brian Roman. Brian, how are you today?
I'm great. Grateful for the invitation. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, Brian, tell us a little bit about your background, where you're from, and your education.
Well, I'm from Peru and South America. Maybe you have heard about Machu Picchu. I was born in Cusco.
Yeah, I've been there twice, actually.
Oh, it's a beautiful place. I was born in Cusco, and I studied civil engineering in Peru. And then I did my master's at Japan, at the University of Tokyo.
Wow.
I'm currently doing my PhD at UC Davis. I have 11 plus years of experience in mining geotechnics, mostly in consulting. And I also had some experience in quality assurance of sand tailings dams. I was in charge of projects related to tailings dams, waste rock dams, and heap leach pads. And I like filter tailings, because it was like the best available technology and most mines are trying to use them. So that's why I published a paper.
Yeah.
Which was an interesting case study from my company.
Yeah. So you hit the fast forward button when you said University of Tokyo. So what made you pick University of Tokyo to get your master's?
Oh, I like geotechnical earthquake engineering at that time. So I was dealing with this cyclic liquefaction problems on tailings on silty soils. Yeah. So that's why I applied to Japan.
Okay. And I did
my master's there. I used the cyclic triaxial to test bauxite tailings and iron ore tailings to understand the cyclic and monotonic behavior of this type of tailings. And that was one year before the Brumadinho failure. I published my results on iron ore tailings, that they can actually be contractive and stream softening materials. And that was something that unfortunately happened.
Right. So there's also a lot of places to get a PhD in geotechnical engineering. How did you pick Cal Davis?
Oh, well, I have many choices. I won a Fulbright scholarship. So they gave me the opportunity to choose 5 universities.
Wow.
And I liked UC Davis because the research project I was offered was very interesting. They are dealing with fly ash. It's very similar tailings to my tailings.
Yeah.
So basically the project is understanding the behavior of fly ash in centrifuge testing. They have the largest centrifuge in the world. And yeah. I saw some previous research they did on fly ash. And I like it because these transitional soils are very similar to mine tailings.
Yes.
So the research was about studying the static liquefaction susceptibility, studying the effects of the velocity of penetration of the CPTU tests, and studying the slurry behavior, the sample preparation and reaction tests. So I like the research topic.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting and close to my interests.
Yeah. Well, that's great. It's great. Okay. And the reason we're talking is because I happened across a paper that you were the lead author for. It's called Nonlinear Dynamic Analysis of Filtered Dry Stack Tailings Using Sansi Sands FS and PM4 Sand Constitutive Models. And that was presented just recently at Tailings 2023 in Santiago. So we want to talk about that, but let's talk a little bit about the conference, because there's a few tailings conferences that occur around the world, and this one seems like it was really well attended this year.
Oh yeah, it was like the first in-person conference after 3 years, I think.
Yeah.
So this conference was virtual last year and the year before, so they came back in person this year. It was great for all the community of South America, and it was like more than 500 participants from many countries, including Australia, Germany, United States, Canada, and it was a very interesting conference to see new developments, case studies, new research projects. We also have some pre-conference courses that were interesting as well.
Yeah.
So I did like the conference. I did like to be in person again.
Yeah. Okay. Good. No, that's great. And the title and topic of your paper isn't really related to your PhD research. So how did you come across this research that you've published in your paper?
Oh, well, the paper is basically part of a project that I was part of when I was working at SRK.
Okay.
The project. So they asked me if I could publish a paper about this case because it was something new, like that. In Peru, we are susceptible to, we're prone to large megatrust earthquakes.
Yeah.
So the main concern is the seismic stability of these facilities.
Yep.
So we normally conduct nonlinear dynamic analysis, and we use FLAC for that. And in this case in particular, there was a new constitutive model, the Sunny Sand SF, which was an academic model that greatly represents the behavior of sands, but it was only at academic level. So SRK Vancouver helped us with the implementation of this model, but for tailings, now for using in the industry. So the idea was to compare this academic model with a common model, which is commonly in the industry, like PM4 sand model. It's the state of practice in nonlinear dynamic analysis is PM4 sand, PM4 silt, that were done in UC Davis by Professor Rose Boulanger. So The main idea in this project, as part of the detailed engineering, was to check the seismic stability of these filtered dry stack tailings. And the idea was to use the common PM4 sand to model the tailings and the co-disposal, but at the same time to check the capabilities of this new model, the sunny sand, that was recently implemented in FLAC by a PhD student from Canada, who is now working at the CERC Vancouver. So it was the first time that this model was used for a material that is different from sands. So that was basically the idea, to compare if this model can add value to the numerical modeling. It's part of the innovation strategy that SRK has on numerical modeling. So they constantly try to use new constitutive models, new techniques, and in this case was the implementation of the sunny sand to compare or check if it's possible to use it on the industry as well. That was the main idea.
And you had some lab tests as input into the model, so you had some undrained monotonic triaxial compression tests. Did that show you that the material was dilatant or contractive, or what did it tell you?
Basically, we did remote samples, and we found that we used the density that we get in situ from the density contests, and most samples, all samples were dilated because they undergo compaction control. So we found that they were mostly contracted, but if we apply more confining stress, we did find some strain softening behavior on filter tailings.
That's a good point.
Confining stress.
That's a good point. A lot of people forget that it might be dilative at lower confining stresses, but if you go higher and higher and higher, it might be contractive. So that's a really good point.
Yes. And in this case, the project was like the third stage of the filter dry stack, but if we consider all these stages, there were like 10 stages, the final confining stress will be so high that it will make the sample contractive and prone to flow liquefaction.
So do you happen to remember what the field moisture content was in the materials?
Degree of saturation. After leaving the filtered press on the filtered plant, it was like 16% of water content. The main idea is to use that material, transport it to an area, and let it dry for a few days until it reduces its moisture to 14%. And then they use lime to reduce it even more to 12%. And with that 12% is the like the moisture, the water content used for compaction. In this case it was 12%.
So it's in the field, did it have any kind of water table inside, like near the base of the stack, or no?
According to the vibrating wire piezometers, there was like a phreatic or water table of 4 meters on the base, and it was variable. Like during rainfall, it increases up to 8 meters, and during dry season, it's like only 1 meter, but there was a water table inside.
So you also had some cyclic brick simple shear tests, right?
Yes.
And what did they tell you?
We conducted cyclic direct simple shear tests on both filter tailings and a co-disposal. one to three, one waste rock and three filter tailings.
Okay.
We found at the density, and this was an effective stress of 400 kPa, we found the liquefaction resistance, the liquefaction triggering curve was like pretty similar to medium dense sand. Like it requires like 14 cycles to liquefy. We considered liquefaction with a 3.75% single amplitude.
Yeah.
So it was medium dense sand if we
do you happen to recall
liquefaction?
Yeah, do you happen to recall the density specification for this? Like standard Proctor number modified?
It was approximately 1.9 grains per cubic centimeters. That was the remold density.
Okay.
Which was similar to what we found on the field.
Yeah. Do you know what Proctor percentage that equates to?
That was approximately the 95% of the standard Proctor.
Standard. Okay, so it's pretty dense.
Yes.
And I can't remember. It's non-plastic tailings, is that right?
Yeah.
No, it's an MLCO.
Plasticity index.
Yeah.
Yes. Plasticity index was about 0 to 4 or 5.
Yeah,
it's a non-plastic seal, basically.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, somewhere around 50 or 60% fines in it. So it's interesting that the water table reacted to the precipitation when it's got so much fines in it. So the CDSS testing showed you that it could liquefy. So the portions under the water table anyway would liquefy. Did you do anything to address the materials above the water table in the model?
Oh, yeah. The materials above the water table are there on partially saturated conditions, but we consider it like dry.
Yeah.
So we only consider them like in fully saturated the part and below the water table. But for those above the water table, we consider it dry. Check the effects of cyclic mobility, for example, or earth-induced displacements. But liquefaction was mainly focused on the saturated tailings.
Yep. Okay. And what did the results show you? What did it indicate to you?
Yeah, this is when it became tricky because the earthquake hazard assessment gave us values of maximum credible earthquake with a PGA of 0.75 or even the earthquake of period of return 1 in 10,000 because this facility was classified as extreme.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 0.92 and the MC was 0.71. So we have to choose between these two earthquakes according to the GSTM.
Yeah.
And we finally decided to use the maximum credible earthquake because like for subduction areas like Peru, Chile, using the probabilistic approach will be like too conservative. So that's why we choose the maximum credible earthquake. It was also very high, 0.71 of PGA.
Then
we conduct like the time history of decelerations. We find some seed input ground motions.
Yeah.
And there is a methodology that was developed by a professor at SRK Argentina, who basically collects like more than 14,000 earthquakes from all the databases of the world. Wow. And they use an algorithm in Python to select based on the frequency content, the natural period of the dam, which are like the 20 more destructive earthquakes. So at the end, we choose 14 earthquakes to model using, and we use also the spectral matching technique. And with that information, the most the worst case scenario was the Maule earthquake that occurred in Chile in 2010, that gave us the worst case displacements and shear strains. For example, using the sunny sand model, we obtained settlements of 2.2 meters, basically. It's like it's a lot. And horizontal displacements of 3.5 meters. And considering the height of the facility, this amount of displacements were going to give a huge damage. If also for the, that was for the co-disposal, also for the filter tailings, we have sediments of approximately 1 meter, horizontal displacements of 2.5 meters. So all the results show that the facility was, will undergo very large displacements.
So in your case, in this case, there's kind of a starter embankment or something at the buttress or something, maybe? So in the case that you're studying, there's some sort of a buttress or embankment at the toe of the facility.
So was that also
disrupted by the earthquake shaking in the programs?
Yeah, this buttress was made of co-disposal.
So it was
like a dike. And there is some sort of embowment, which was only filtered tailings. Okay. That was the design. Okay. And in this buttress that you mentioned, there's also huge settlements of 2.5 and horizontal displacements of 3.5 as well. So that was for the worst case scenario. We also used other earthquakes, and we checked that for all the 14 earthquakes we use, the displacements horizontal and vertical were like above 1 meter. So it was clear that if an earthquake of this magnitude happened, it was going to be moderate to serious damage. We used the empirical database by Swaysgood to check if the settlements of the crest were going to make some, what type of damage is going to happen, and we obtained that the damage will be to moderate serious and it would require reparations. So we had to take actions because this level of displacements and settlements were not like allowable.
Still much better than you would get with a brittle tailings like at Brumadinho. So we're talking, it wouldn't leave the property at all. It would stay really within the footprint of the facility.
Yeah, it's not like flow liquefaction and total disaster, but it will show some localized damage and probably some shallow failure in the slope and cracks, and it would require some repairs.
Yeah.
So that's why we, afterwards, we decided to increase the buttress to reduce the displacement to a lower level. We wanted the displacements to be on the order of 1.5, maximum 1.5 meters.
Okay. And I guess we should tell the listeners that this is on pretty steep terrain, and the filtered tailings is at a pretty steep angle. It's not one like a flat top facility. It's everything is sloping there.
Yes. It has some benches on the filtered tailings.
Yeah.
And of course, after the earthquake, there are going to be many shallow failures on the slope of the tailings.
Yeah.
But that could be repaired. It's not like a flow, like you mentioned, Brumadinho.
Right. But yeah.
We wanted also to reduce the displacement, not to be so large, like 3.5 meters is a lot. So we wanted to reduce it to 1.5 meter or 2 meters at maximum. So that was the conclusion for this analysis. In both models, the Sunny Sand and the PM4 Sun, both models match fairly. They both show small difference, both in settlements and horizontal displacements. So
okay.
We conclude that the Sunny Sand SF model, it can be used for filtered tailings. But for the co-disposal, we had some issues in the calibration. We need to force the model. If we compare the values of the parameters for the calibration of the Sunny Sand model with the sand, and then we compare those values with the co-disposal, we found a huge difference. And in the calibration, we did not get a very well calibration of the co-disposal for the Sunny Sand and the PM4 Sand. There is no model that, at least in the office where I work, we couldn't find a model that can reproduce fairly the behavior of the co-disposal. I think it still needs more research on that
type of material. Interesting. And you ran 14 different earthquake time histories. Did you find that the results were in a pretty tight band? I know you said that the Chilean one was the worst, but was there a big scatter in the results, or was it pretty close together?
There was a standard deviation that was only 1.5 meters, so it was pretty...
Yeah.
Normal. All the earthquakes gave more than 1.5 meters. So we had more confidence that the values were probably similar to the real in the case of an earthquake.
Yeah. I would think that the owner would be pretty happy with 1.5 meters of deformation if and when this monster earthquake hits.
Yeah, these are monster earthquakes. 8.5 tonight, magnitude moment.
Yeah. So what are your key takeaways from this research?
Well, the first, and I think most importantly, is that the co-disposal is a very complex material that we couldn't find any constituted model that can represent its behavior fairly, and more research is needed to actually understand how these materials behave in both static and dynamic conditions.
Yeah,
that's a thing, because the models, as their name mentioned, are for sands, sunny sand, PM4 sand. They could be used for non-plastic seals. We can adjust them, and we have some fair agreement with the lab testing but for the coal disposal, we couldn't get a good calibration. It was like very difficult. Another takeaway, I think, is that this filter dry stack tailings, even for these huge earthquakes, are a good choice, unlike, for example, normal conventional tailings impoundments that will liquefy and probably create a failure like Brumadinho. So the filtered tailings are good for earthquake conditions, especially in subduction zones prone to megathrust earthquakes. So it's good to know that filtered tailings are also resistant to large scale earthquakes.
Yeah, resistant.
Another takeaway would be like the for filtered tailings, only tailings, the Sunny Sand and the PM4 Sand model, they both match very well. Like, the tailings can be represented by these models fairly, and these two models show an agreement. So in the future, we can use with confidence for filtered tailings these two models, PM4 Sand and Sunny Sand, complementing them to have a big overview of what would be the behavior under dynamic conditions. The another ones, like you mentioned, the behavior is like they are going to suffer some moderate to serious damage, but it's going to be damage that can be repaired. It's like cracks, shallow failures, but it's not going to be like a very tragic and disastrous failure like what happened in Fundao or Magia. That's very important. Like these filtered tailings are a good choice in countries prone to megathrust earthquakes. The filtered tailings are recommendable. Not only for all the advantages we already know, but because it's also very resistant to this type of megathrust earthquakes. So it's another advantage we just found to choose this type of technology.
That's great. And Brian, what do you hope to find out with your centrifuge testing?
Currently we are conducting models with a mini CPT, and since these materials, the fly ash is sealed, we found that at the standard velocity of penetration of the CPT, partially drain conditions are predominant. So when we use the values of the tip resistance, for example, in partially drain conditions, we might not have true values of undrained shear strength, the state parameter. So what we're doing right now is changing the velocity of the CPT, making it faster, so it can actually reach undrained conditions. For that, we use the normal velocity, which can be obtained using the coefficient of consolidation. And when we increase the velocity of the CPT penetration from 20 millimeters per second to 50 or 100 millimeters per second, we can actually reach true undrained conditions. And we can compare what's the relation between drain penetration and undrained penetration. And we found that there are a relationship up to 10 times of difference between the undrained and the drain penetration for contractive samples. So it's like very scary sometimes. Like, we are using CPT in dream condition. We are like overestimating our parameters. So
yeah,
the That's main a- takeout of this yeah. part of my research is like to actually change in the field the velocity of the CPTU for mine tailings, fly ash, and other type of transitional soils.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's great, because in tailings we seldom care about the drain strength. Not that we don't care, but it's not the biggest concern. It's undrained shear strength, like you were saying, that the CPT was the penetration speed was set up so that it's drained in sands and undrained in clay. And so if we really don't care that much about the drain strength, I think this is a brilliant way to go. Look, I look forward to the results of your research, and you know, maybe we even get an ASTM standard that's revised or rewritten for tailings.
Oh, that would be interesting. In fact, we're gonna show the results on the GeoCongress of the next year.
Oh, okay.
We just submitted the paper. So we're gonna show some results, and probably for the tailings and mine waste, if we finish, we also gonna show some results. But it would be very interesting to like change the STM for mine tailings, as you mentioned.
Yeah, it would be, but at least if your research is convincing and compelling, maybe it becomes just a standard practice for tailings.
Yeah, I think so. There are also some efforts I heard from Professor Robertson. His company developed a very fast vein shear testing.
Oh, okay.
So to obtain the undrained condition during the speed of the vein shear, they also made a super fast vein shear testing. It's also similar. They presented on the last year's Tailings and Mine Waste conference. So I think the industry is moving toward this type of changes especially for mine tailings.
Yeah, and that's great, because I've always been a fan of the field vein shear test. But like you say, you don't really understand the drainage conditions, because there's not a pore pressure transducer there. So you're not convinced whether it was drained or undrained.
Yes.
So if it's a faster test without... If you're only concerned about the residual strength, you don't really care that you sheared it so fast that you didn't see the peak. And that's the only negative of doing it faster, is that you don't see what the peak strength was. But it's, of course, the residual strength that people ought to be more interested in.
Oh, yeah.
And I think
it's a prototype. From Professor Robertson's company.
Yeah.
But this year, I think it's going to be available for use in the industry.
Okay, that's great. That's great. Brian, I know as a PhD student, you're a busy guy, and I don't want to keep you much longer, but was there anything you wanted to talk about that I didn't bring up today?
No, I think we talked about many interesting topics.
Yeah.
About filtered tailings, about centrifuge CPT. It was pretty very fun.
Well, good. Yeah, well, good. And I will definitely not let you know when this goes on the air. And I really appreciate your time today, Brian. And I look forward to the research being published.
Oh, I also thank you for the invitation. It was an honor to be part of your podcast.
It was a lot of fun, and maybe have you back when you publish your findings.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks again, Brian, and have a great day, and we will talk to you later.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Have a nice day.
You too. Ciao.
Well, that's it. I'm Brian, and this is Behind the Scenes with Brian. Until next time, keep on rockin'.